Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in our nation's capital today, Washington, D.C. And as always, I am joined by
Bob Bazanko in what may one day be the capital of an independent Texas. Who knows? But
it's only a matter of time.
If you're watching or listening or whatever, hit the like button and share and subscribe and all that fun stuff. Right?
Yeah. You're listening to this great podcast where we've been just like cranking out the episodes lately. We're very popular with authors lately, as folks may notice, and we've been doing a lot of shows with folks about their books. But to kick off this week's episode, we're going to do our Radical Week in History. On March 14th in 1883, Karl Marx dies at the age of 64. Marx was a lifelong revolutionary born in Germany who had been exiled to London. Together with Frederick Engels, he had founded the communist tradition. His works included Capital and the Communist Manifesto. And I also want to point out about 2 years ago for Marx's birthday, which is on May 5th, we actually did an interview with Professor David McNally from the University of Houston. And so you should definitely check out that episode because it's a very informative episode about the life and legacy of Karl Marx. And then on March 15th, 1916, Woodrow Wilson sent almost 5,000 U.S. soldiers over the U.S.-Mexico border to capture Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa. I want to mention is we have a little bit of an anti-empire theme for some of these today. The other really significant event in the history of the empire that I want to talk about, which is on March 20th, 2003, the U.S. invades Iraq. We've done many episodes over the last 4 years on Iraq. Last year was the 20th anniversary. We did a whole episode on the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
Yeah. March 16th is an important day for reasons which are still really relevant and important today. Three major events happened. We had two activists, two women who were martyred that day. In 1965, on March 16th, Alice Herz, who was a Holocaust survivor, immolated herself to protest the Vietnam War, which was the first of many immolations in the next few years. The most famous, probably the best known, was probably Norman Morrison, who did it within view of Robert McNamara's office. But this is especially, I think, timely and meaningful right now, because just a couple of weeks ago, Aaron Bushnell, who was an Air Force soldier, immolated himself in Washington, D.C., in front of the Israeli embassy, right?
Yes.
To protest the Biden-induced slaughters and genocide in Gaza. And there is a long tradition of this, of the famous Mong Quoc Duc in Vietnam in June of 1963, which was a major event in the history of that war. I know I'm probably an outlier on this, but it's weird to me that Kennedy actually increased aid, because I keep hearing he was trying to get out of the war, but I guess that's neither here nor there, right?
He was a secret dove, Bob. Come on.
Yeah. And then on March 16th, 2003, another really well-known American activist was killed in Gaza, and that was Rachel Corrie. And do you want to talk a little bit about Rachel Corrie?
Yeah, Rachel Corrie actually went to Evergreen College in Olympia, Washington. She'd been involved in many peace and other social movements. She actually was in Rafah, which is one of the last sort of holdout spaces right now in Israel. The Israelis were actually bulldozing Palestinian homes, and the Israelis just killed her, mowed her down with the bulldozer. And you actually have been hearing a lot about Rachel Corrie recently because of the Israeli genocide in Gaza. But Rachel Corrie was a union member. She was a member of an SEIU local in the Pacific Northwest. Some of those locals, they actually tried to get a resolution passed to divest from Caterpillar, who actually owned the bulldozer. There were actually campaigns by peace activists and anti-occupation, what was the anti-occupation movement in Palestine at the time, Not, I believe the National SEIU did not divest, but a number of the locals did, including the ones in the Northwest and in the Bay Area.
I believe actually the union membership castigated the locals, which voted to divest. The union leadership, when they perceive jobs to be at stake, take a human rights and things like that, take a back seat. But Rachel Corrie, really important. It's also a kind of an interesting coda to that, which I'm not sure as many people know. A few years after that, I forget who it was, but somebody put together a play of her writings, of her letters, called My Name is Rachel Corrie, which was to open in New York. And various powers that be who were connected to the Israeli lobby pressured, and they did not do that. It later did open, and then it opened in London with the backing of the actor, the late actor Alan Rickman, was important in that. So Rachel Corrie, and I remember after she died, within the next year, I think, she came out to Houston. Her parents, I'm sorry, came out to Houston for a visit. We had them on the radio, and we went with them to the consulate, and I know you and I were there at a protest. Really, an important woman who was calling these things out. 20 years, the liberals and Biden, the media want us to believe this began on October 7th, 2023. Rachel Corrie was killed more than 20 years before that, on March 16th, 2003, and obviously the Nakba goes back even further than that. And then, oh, go ahead. Do you want to say something? Or,
No, I was just
right.
agreeing.
And then, the last thing, which I think is also really, really relevant, is that on March 16th, 1968, the My Lai massacre occurred. And then, about exactly a year later, a veteran and a journalist, Ron Ridenour, who'd worried about the My Lai massacre, had been going around, and the army had heard about it. They had done investigations, including one with Colin Powell, which were just whitewashed, right? And then Ron Ridenour wrote about it to congressmen and media, and the famous journalist Seymour Hersh, who's a friend of Green and Red, wrote about it and broke it open. And I think because right now, so much of the Israeli propaganda is being based on these stories of what Hamas did on October 7th, and there's a couple of things going on there. One, we don't see any evidence of it yet. The media played up this thing like UN finds evidence of Hamas sex crimes, but the reality is, there isn't any confirmation. Now, I think it's important to understand, and My Lai showed it, these kinds of things happen. And so the media is trying to put this slant on it. These are Arabs doing it, or these are Muslims doing it, but this is really common in war. And My Lai was really one of the most notable, the best known example of that during the Vietnam War. And really, the only person who actually got in any kind of trouble for it was Lieutenant William Cowley, who's the head of Charlie Company. He was initially sentenced to 20 years for murder. Nixon commuted it to house arrest. There was an investigation done by General William Pierce, the Pierce Commission. Pierce actually did a quite good job and recommended 34 different court martials for U.S. soldiers at My Lai, which did not take place. Ernest Medina, who was
Captain of.
the captain of second in command, I believe, to Cowley, was found not guilty. And essentially, these people were using that Nazi defense, right? I was just following orders. Many years ago, I met a lawyer who was actually a part of the prosecuting team for Cowley, and he caught hell. He was ostracized. People really were pissed off at him because they thought Cowley, and ironically, even VVAW, the anti-war veterans, they didn't defend Cowley, but they essentially pointed out Cowley was being scapegoated, that this kind of stuff went on. And I think right now, because so much of the propaganda, and I'm not suggesting Hamas, as I don't know what happened, but we do know that so many of these allegations from the start, babies beheaded and all kinds of stuff like that, just have no verification. There's no evidence for them. They've never been proven after all this time. Remember, with day two or three, a hospital got blown up, and the U.S. immediately said that was Hamas. Israel didn't go, oh, they've now blown up, what, 35 more hospitals, right? So
Right.
just when we talk about wars and things like that, this is the nature of them. But it's also important to understand that the United States fights wars as brutally as any country ever has. They dropped two atomic bombs on Japan. In Vietnam, they had free fire zones. Kinds of things like happened in My Lai were not rare. They weren't uncommon. They didn't happen every day, but they weren't uncommon either.
They dropped more bombs on Vietnam than they did on Germany and Japan combined,
Combined, yeah.
the non-atomic bombing.
And Vietnam is roughly the size and area of New Mexico. So imagine 4.6 million tons of bombs dropped on New Mexico. But I think the way that the U.S. handled Mila Kali became a national hero in a lot of ways. In the South, radio stations would talk about him, the hero. And I forget, somebody wrote a song about him, the Ballad of William Kali, and all kinds of stuff like that. Most public opinion polls showed sympathy for him. And like I said, even VAW, he was a scapegoat. This is the way the war was being fought. And there were, was clearly understood. You go out there and you just kill everything that moves. And it's just like, considering the way the propaganda, especially right now, is taking root, I think that's important.
I think it's, and you can tell the story much better than I can, but I think it's also important to point out the heroic actions of people on that day, which included Hugh Thompson, who I believe was a warrant officer,
yeah,
who actually stopped some of the killing by Charlie Company.
Yeah. Yeah, Hugh Thompson was in a helicopter and he saw these Vietnamese being lined up and just slaughtered. And so he asked, he made the copter go down. He actually positioned himself in between Cali's troops and the Vietnamese. And when then there's an exchange there where Cali's pissed off about it. And Thompson says, "What are you doing here?" And Cali tries to pull rank and Thompson says, "I'm going to report this. We'll see what happens." And he did. But like I said, the initial investigations were kind of whitewashed. But Hugh Thompson, in a really vile and lurid war, Hugh Thompson emerges as a really notable and noble individual. You don't see that very often, actually, in all of U.S. War history. The kind of things that Hugh Thompson did don't appear that often. But yeah, amid that really horror, that darkness. He was a really heroic figure. And that's important to know too. But just right now, I've had people who I generally think have pretty good politics who are saying, "Oh, what about Hamas?" Or even people in Gaza don't like Hamas, or Hamas did this. And it's a war. And what they did on October 7th was included a massacre, atrocities. I don't know what word you want to use for them. But obviously what Israel's done, what we know about, it's just important to understand the nature of war, what happens, and why this is all really fodder for propaganda. And it's really difficult to say this is only Hamas doing this is what the Palestinians are doing, whatever, because no one has a record of terror and attacking civilians and conducting these human rights atrocities more than Israel does.
And if you want to see them, Israeli soldiers are more than happy to be posting them on TikTok.
And that's the thing.
I'm not joking. I'm not being cute here either. I am.
No,
cute,
I know. And I'm glad you said that, because you know, that's an important point. Because with Mila there, we have images and we have the firsthand. We know exactly what happened that day, right? The facts really aren't in question. In addition to the murders, and I think there were 128 murdered, there were about 24 or more rapes and sexual assaults to get to this point about sexual assaults in wartime, right? That was clearly happening. We know what happened there. And right now in Gaza with these IDF troops, we know what's happening because they're bragging about it. They're putting images up. They're putting them on Instagram. They're putting them on Twitter and everywhere else. TikTok. And that's the thing. If you want to attack somebody, you better. And so like the whole they beheaded 40 babies thing. At this point, I think we can pretty safely say that never happened, because within 6 months, if something that horrific and heinous had happened, there would be some evidence of it. Because, you know,
the Israelis and the U.S. would have been more than happy to share that evidence if it actually happened at this point.
Exactly. And they said, "I've seen it." That would be everywhere, right? That stuff would have been released everywhere. It's just something to keep in mind. There is a historical legacy here. This is the way wars are fought.
I want to point out one other thing about Milei, is that after the complaints were made about the massacre, that within the army bureaucracy, it was actually, there was a pretty big attempt at a cover-up. And one of the culprits of that was a major who later became a general and chair of the Joint Chiefs and Secretary of State, which was Colin Powell. Yeah. Colin Powell is actually often touted as a hero in many circles, not in our circle. But I just want to point out the importance is that Colin Powell, who actually sold in early 2003 that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, is also the same person who attempted to cover up the Mila massacre. And so he was not railroaded into doing anything in 2003. He had a history of it. And I think that's an important thing to point out, because he's seen as a hero by many when the Gulf War, for whatever.
Yeah. No, it's really this really lurid and frightening thing. And what's important to understand too is, because it's often presented as an outlier, an aberration, and it's not the case. there were, Nick Turris wrote a book called Kill Anything That Moves, which is, if you study Vietnam, everything in there you're aware of already because you would have seen the reports. There was a group called Tiger Battalion, which run around, and their only role was really to destroy and murder kind of civilians. And keep in mind, in the Vietnam War, about 3 million Vietnamese died. And the big majority of them were not soldiers. There weren't that many soldiers in Vietnam, actually, right? So it was a war that killed a lot of civilians. And yeah, this is just the nature of war, of American wars. It's what Israel is doing today. There are great similarities between what Israel is doing in Gaza today and what the U.S. did in Vietnam. And I think that's important to reckon with. And I think, oh, go ahead.
The other operation from Vietnam, which actually reminds me a lot of what's going on in Gaza, is the Phoenix Project, where the U.S. military was trying to destroy the Viet Cong infrastructure in the South and basically waged a war against the civilians of assassination and torture and all of that, which is exactly what the Israelis are doing, saying that they're trying to dismantle Hamas.
Yeah. I mean, I've spoken to a significant number, a lot of Vietnam vets. And I mean, I really do think 100% of them, all of them, had some anecdote about seeing a Vietnamese civilian tortured or killed. But the point of the war, too, is like one of the measures of success was the body count, right? We killed this many. For instance, in My Lai, the government announced that it killed 128 Viet Cong. There were very few men left in the village. They were all gone. So when they got to the village, it was almost all just women and kids. And yet they reported 128 VC dead. And the media ate it up, and it was in Stars and Stripes, and it was just reported as a successful battle. It was like and that was the way the U.S. did it. We killed more of them, and we keep get the numbers going. But at the end of the day, that didn't obviously mean a whole lot. And keep in mind, too, the difference between Vietnam and Gaza. Vietnam's a big country. There are places you can go, and you actually have support from the Viet Cong or the PAVN or whoever. In Gaza, there's no such thing. These are people who are now in what Rafah, basically, you've virtually what million, two almost 2 million people in southern Gaza and Rafah who have nowhere to go and don't have any support. Egypt is not supporting them, right? So it's a really horrific situation. But I know people are stunned by this, as they should be. It's horrific. But this is how these kinds of wars are fought. And it really is, if you follow this closely, sadly and strikingly similar to what the United States did in Vietnam, which is one of the biggest war crimes in military history. And when Israel is clearly matching that right now.
Right.
So to Alice Herz and Rachel Corey and Ron Ridenour and Hugh Thompson, present a salute.
And, thanks. Thanks for you did.
The other day, we talked to Graham Klumpner, who was active in the interwar and anti-imperial movement in the military. Last year, we talked to Henry Hendrickson from Fortress on a Hill, which is a group of anti-war vets. There's a group called About Face, Vets for Peace, VVAW. So there are a lot of soldiers out there who are really doing great stuff and who are trying to keep this kind of legacy alive of these peacemakers, right? People like Hugh Thompson and Ron Ridenour and others. But it's an important legacy to understand.
As folks know, I always like to make a connection between war efforts and corporations. And so I want to talk about this new report that just came out from some comrades at Oil Change International, which is a nonprofit that does a lot to shed a light on the machinations of the oil industry and oil industry's connection to government and how the government subsidizes the oil industry and the oil industry's participation in things like the wars in Ukraine and in Gaza. But they, Oil Change, worked with a research outfit called DataDesk to provide an overview of the supply chains that are currently bringing crude oil and refined products to Israel. The main aim of the analysis was to determine what are the main countries supplying fuel to Israel, and then what are the main major international oil and gas companies supplying fuel to Israel and the Israeli military. So what they found was that Israel continues to receive a substantial amount of JP-8 jet fuel from the U.S. to fuel their F-35s and whatever else. Just recently, the Israelis have received 3 tankers of JP-8 jet fuel from the U.S. Besides the jet fuel, Israel's military is requiring significant quantities of diesel and gasoline for tanks and other military vehicles. The main countries supplying Israel with these crude oil imports are Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Russia, Gabon, and Brazil, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But the crude oil comes from these countries and it's going to Israeli refineries where they're refining it and then giving it to the military. And then the major international oil and gas companies that are complicit in facilitating these supplies of crude oil include British Petroleum, Chevron, which we've actually talked about before, ExxonMobil, Shell, Eni, and Total. Total is a French oil company. Azerbaijani crude is being delivered to Israel via the Baku-Tbilisi pipeline, which terminates in Turkey, but's loaded on tankers by British Petroleum and sent to the Israelis. And then there's been at least two shipments of Brazilian crude oil totaling about 260,000 tons that have been delivered to Israel since the start of Israel's invasion of Gaza. And so I want to point out a kind of key thing about Brazil, which is it's currently being led by a supposed leftist, which is Lula, but the Brazilian National Oil Company is extracting and sending the crude oil in partnership with Shell and Total to the Israelis. Lula has been actually highly critical of Israel, but also continues to sell them fuel. And then That's okay. Go ahead.
No, just today, I think Jared Kushner is also not necessarily talking about oil, but he has mentioned the economic opportunities in Gaza, saying that seaside property in Gaza is very valuable. And he said that Israel should just move the people out and then clean it up. He said they should bulldoze the Negev to give them a place to live. The Palestinian state is a super bad idea. Sounds like Bill and Ted. And this may be a goofy young trust fund kid, but at the same time, he might end up being like the chief counselor to the president of the United States again. So there's clearly these economic motives going on there that really the media and others aren't talking about.
Speaking of Kushner, who just got a huge sum of money from the Saudis to develop and invest, the Israelis are also getting crude oil via the Sumed pipeline. It's crude oil from Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Iraq, and Egypt. All of those countries have condemned Israel's actions in Gaza, but they continue to sell them crude oil. Yeah. And then also the Russians also continue to sell gas oil to refineries in Haifa in Israel. And so this is a little bit of the nature of the beast in which we live in, political capitalist economy, whatever, that we have politicians like Lula and these Muslim states, which are actually condemning the Israelis' slaughter of Gazans, but then they continue to make money by selling them oil.
Yeah. And groups in the United States right now are already selling titles to settlements in places like West Bank and Gaza. So they're selling land they don't own that they're just going to go in and seize and take over.
And we talked in the previous episode about how Chevron is developing undersea gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean, and they're actually working on building a hub to develop fuel and refine it. And it's a sort of bonanza going on for them as we see in many wars.
Yeah, and that's something I think, you know, we really need to think more about. I need to look into that more, just what the various opportunities, the investment opportunities and things like that are, because they're certainly meaningful. But what we're looking at right now, Biden has this freaking dog and pony show where he criticizes Israel and then he sends them more weapons, and he's doing that still. And we're really in this horrific situation here.
Or where he drops 11,000 meals into Gaza to feed 1.3 million people.
Yeah.
Or he's going to he's building a dock too, right?
Because that's way easier than just sending trucks in. Because I'm sure if you see there, you have Israeli citizens are blockading these aid trucks and they refuse to make a move. So we're looking at it, and the UN has warned this could be like a massive famine. And famines, it takes a bit, but when it happens rapidly, it's one of those things where if you don't get to it soon, you're going to see immense, massive numbers of people dying from starvation. Yeah, it's really horrific. It's something that you wouldn't have imagined in 2024.
Yeah,
what's clearly happening in full view of the world. It's on every day, like you pointed out. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. People are posting it. They're not hiding it. and the international courts have condemned Israel. Nothing's happened. Nothing's happened. It's funny because I see a lot of these lefties like Caitlin Johnstone, who I never will understand how she became so famous, but that's neither here nor there, saying all it has to do is Biden. All Biden has to do is make one phone call to end all this. I don't know how naive you have to be to believe that, but Netanyahu has leverage. He has huge leverage, right? Biden can't make a phone call. I mean, first of all, there's no reason he would. That's not who he is. Joe Biden has been this Zionist imperialist for his whole life. I don't know why people switch to APAC. Like, this is who Biden is. He's always been like this. Biden were to call Netanyahu. Netanyahu the other day got pissed off because Schumer said he should have elections. He said, we're not a banana republic, right? You don't, the US doesn't have that kind of leverage at this point. And it's not something that's even feasible. So the idea that Biden's going to make a phone call and end this is just preposterous. And even if he did, you think Netanyahu is going to say, yep, you're right, we're going to withdraw tomorrow? Of course not. He's not. There comes a time where the client actually tends to have some power over the patron. I think we're seeing that here.
We're also seeing a lot of the damage already done. I mean, they've cleared, Gaza's not that big a place, and they've
No.
cleared a big portion of it.
Yeah.
Many people are crammed into refugee camps in the south and places like Rafah. We're now starting to, like you pointed out, where how many hospitals have been blown up? 35,
36.
36. We're seeing the onset of famine. The Israelis are blocking aid from going in to deliver food and medical supplies. The Egyptians won't let them into Egypt. And even if they stopped it, there's tremendous amount of damage has already been done. Like 13,000 children are dead, over 31,000 people total are killed. And however many more like wounded and how many more on top of that are traumatized by this whole thing, it's going to affect what goes on in the Middle East and probably the world for like generations to come, same as Iraq and Afghanistan.
There's no easy way out of this. I mean, they're attacking food trucks. They're attacking these Palestinians are running to get food and they're getting shot at. It's violation of every imaginable international law. And yet they do it very callously, which is why I don't think Biden has any leverage, frankly. I don't, what's he going to do? Right? He's not going to pull support. Come on. He's not going to pull support. That's just never going to happen. John Fetterman won't let him, right?
Chuck
So.
Schumer won't let him.
Schumer all that. Yeah, that was a dog and pony show for Schumer to do that, right? That was just like that was done for public. Like you say, we're trying. I keep thinking of that scene in Back to School where Rodney is trying to get back into school with the dean, Ned Beatty, and the other guy won't doesn't want Rodney back in school. And Ned Beatty says, "What do you want me to do, Phil? Torture him?" That's Biden, right? What am I supposed to do? You know, what can I do? Netanyahu doesn't listen. He's an asshole. He's crazy. You know,
It's all
he's
performative. It's all
totally
performance
performative. It's
politics.
totally performative. Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems like they're noticing that they're alienating their base in places like Georgia and Michigan, North Carolina, all of which they should be having like an easy time in. And so we see Schumer call for an election to throw out Netanyahu, or we see Biden drop 10,000 meals to 1 million people, and it's it or he's going to build a dock. The Israelis wouldn't block the dock. So it's just performance politics to make people in Michigan and Georgia vote for him.
And when that doesn't happen, you just castigate them and you attack them and you criticize them and ridicule them. That's the liberal way. You just make fun and you deride and mock other people. You don't try to understand what they're saying. It's easier to attack your voters than it is to hold Biden accountable for some of the worst crimes we've seen.
What they did about Sanders in 2016 after Hillary lost, what they did about Nader in 2000 after Gore lost, that's going to be Rashida Tlaib if Biden loses.
Yeah, they know how to play hardball against people like that. But yeah, it's really difficult. And I think you and I are as wary of another Trump term as anybody. The man is a sociopath and he's insane. But you can take him on. The guy is, I was saying this for 8 years, he's like the Wizard of Oz, right? He's this scary guy behind a curtain. But when you pull the curtain back, Trump is a buffoon. He's a freaking clown. He's an idiot.
I actually am increasingly believing he doesn't really know what's going on around him.
Oh, he's clueless. Yeah, he's got some kind of problems, right? But he's been calling for bloodbath for 8 years, and January 6th aside, and I'm not going to downplay that. That was a big deal, but still. And he fell into that anyway. But Trump has been doing this, and what's happened? I don't understand this constant breathless, hysterical fear, right? Well, he's a coup. He's a fascist. He's a bad guy. Absolutely. He's dangerous. He needs to be stopped. Well, instead of freaking crying and getting so upset about it and doing nothing, people need to go out and actually challenge him and stop him. As you pointed out earlier, even those groups that Trump could rely on have been pretty badly hit since January 6th.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to point out is that those who were organized on the far right through the Trump years, before the Trump years, talking about the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, which were the provocateurs of street violence, are in many ways they're broken. Their leadership is in prison, or they're doing their time, or they're awaiting sentencing. I think they're probably holding out that if Trump gets in, he's going to pardon them because he's calling them hostages and patriots and things like that. But I think it's important to note that the sort of bloodbath language is a little bit just like it's smoke and mirrors at this point, right? There's a lot of people out there. We actually did a show recently on the Texas border, and there was a caravan that was supposed to be 50,000 people strong or 100,000 people strong. And it wasn't more than a couple hundred people. And then also when you watch the video of those folks, it was a bunch of yahoos, right? It was a bunch of, it's not the kind of folks who are going to really be able to confront the military or the federal law enforcement or anything like that. And it's like wingnuts. The Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers really aren't those people either, but they were a little bit better organized, a little bit better trained than the border caravan.
Yeah, for 8 years, liberals have confronted Trump with fear. That's all they have, fear and hysterics, instead of actually challenging him. And I see them more upset over RFK Jr. running or something like that, or attacking people on the left, Cornel West or whoever, than actually engaging Trump. Hell, Mike Pence has taken on Trump.
Nikki Haley has taken on Trump.
Nikki Haley's taken. It can be done. And it's just sad that the American political system, which I thought had hit rock bottom decades ago, really just keeps going worse and worse and lower. I don't know what to do.
Just when you think they've hit bottom, it goes lower, Bob.
Yeah.
A new low.
Yeah. And it's also, you and I have always had this critique of liberals, and wow, I think we were even too generous. Maybe they may be worse than we thought they were. Yeah.
You know? I definitely feel like with the current liberal regime that's in power here in Washington, I think back about the history around the 60s era, around Cold War politics and the Vietnam era, and how vicious these, that's how I, for the first time in a long time, I really like feeling that with how Biden continues to give arms to the Israelis, how Biden continues to give arms to the Ukrainians, and how we're just seeing these vicious wars play out all in the interest of whatever geopolitics they think is going to be beneficial for them.
Yeah, and liberals have always been imperialist. And I think that's one thing that, and we're talking about liberal politicians and establishment liberals when I'm talking about somebody on the street who votes for a Democrat or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But liberals created the Cold War, right? Truman and Acheson and Clark Clifford and all of those people, they were liberals. They believed in the kind of these traditional liberal ideals, right? And liberals brought us the Vietnam War. And that's the one thing that these, the Oliver Stone clown car crew, doesn't understand. These guys are corporate liberals. Kennedy was part of that. You know, Kennedy's part of this complex, this corporate military industrial complex. He's not an enemy. He's not an outlier. He's not trying to take it down or anything like that. I know I was involved in DSA politics a long time ago. And the two things you could not talk about, more than two actually, but one was the Cold War per se. They were hardcore anti-communist, anti-Soviet. But not in a nuanced way. And then Israel, you couldn't talk about. You just couldn't even bring it up. And actually Cuba, even. They didn't like Castro. The American left, the liberals, and there are a lot of good people on the left who are anti-imperial. But I think what we're seeing right now, it's really appalling to me when somebody will shout out a question to Biden or say something that makes him feel uncomfortable. And the crowd will just start chanting four more years and drown out somebody. They don't want to hear it. And how the hell is that different than a MAGA cult?
It's a blue MAGA cult.
They're not as violent, thank God. And there's clearly a difference. They're not crazy violent, pizza parlor, conspiracy, let's kill people. But they're nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not shooting up. It's not Pizzagate. I've seen them be violent to people who are doing those bird dogs of politicians in the moment, though. Like people get violently yanked out of a Biden rally as much as they got violently yanked out of a Trump rally.
Yeah, and look at the way to this day, they continue to praise Hillary Clinton, and they think Obama hung the moon and all that kind of stuff. We really are in a crisis, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to be any better in the next 4 years. It's going to get choppy. This, I think, what Boeing has now become a great symbol for the whole United States, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We forgot to put a couple rivets in the door. That's all right.
Yeah, let's just lose the video. Folks, you've been listening to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. If you like what you're hearing, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, give us a rate and review as it helps us with the algorithms. And then if you really like us, go to our website, greenandredpodcast.org, and hit that support button, or go to our Patreon at patreon.com/greenredpodcast and become a regular subscriber to us. And then also, if you want some Green and Red swag, we've got these awesome trucker hats. That Bob, if you're watching the video, you can see it right there. Only $25, which includes shipping and handling. And just email us at greenredpodcast@gmail.com and we'll get you one of those. And then we also have many copies of Bob's first book, Masters of War, for $35. And also email us at greenredpodcast.org and you can get one of these rare editions of the of Masters rare. Of War by Professor Robert Bezanko.
I'm sure how rare it is, but there you go. And it's Seymour Hersh liked it. So,
and Seymour Hersh gave us a nice blurb.
Yeah, a great blurb.
Gave Bob a nice blurb. Not he's given us a nice blurb too, but he gave the book a nice blurb.
Yeah.
And folks, we will be back again real soon with more episodes. And until then, everybody stay safe, make trouble, and misbehave.
Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore. A plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag, cow, won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like you, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag cow won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning. The cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag cow won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like heaven, no matter what the reason's for it. And your flag cow won't get you into heaven anymore.